It was October of 1943. A man by the name of Joseph Rosensoft was in a very dark, cold, concrete cell in the Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp. He was in Block 11. He and two others were in Block 11. And Block 11 was set aside for the troublemakers, for the Jews who tried to escape, the Jews who would create resistance, who would try to fight in the concentration camp. The people who were in Block 11 were tortured and executed every Monday. He had been arrested on a Thursday with his two friends and had to wait 5 days for his execution. In those 5 days, they pondered what could have possibly gone wrong. And then they realized is what had happened is the Unterkapo, which were spies that the Secret Service planted within the Jews in the concentration camps to listen for any possibility of plans of escape or plans of riot or plans to take over, plans to do anything. And they guessed that the Unterkapo had heard of their escape plans. And they did have a good escape plan. Their escape plan was to leave their work detail during the time when the Nazi guards were changing shifts. And they would run and hide in an abandoned tunnel that very few people knew about. And they would stay hidden there until the Nazis gave up looking for them. And then they were going to travel several miles through the woods to a small village where they knew there was a doctor, a German doctor, not a Jew, who would hide them and take care of them. Monday rolled around, and they could hear the cell doors on the other cells open, and the occupants drug out, screaming, rifle shots, no more screaming. And it happened over and over, and they waited for their cell door to open, but it never did. And long after all of the executions had finished, a guard came and opened their door and sent them back to the general population. And they never knew why. Well, good morning. Once again, I want to welcome everybody today. We're continuing our series in Back to Basics. And we're going back and looking at what we call the 10 core concepts of the science of mind. Last week we talked about God is all there is. Well, this week we're going to talk about the triune nature of God. The title of my talk is The Divine Creative Process. And I have three sort of major points that I'm going to talk about. The first is that triune nature of the divine. Secondly, I'm going to talk a little bit about our teaching symbol. And thirdly, I'm going to talk just a little bit about how the universe is made of a fabric of oneness. But first of all, the triune nature of God. This is not to say that we can classify, that we can take that divine essence, the divine creative force of the universe, and divide it up into three nice, neat little packages. That isn't it at all. But if we do consider that divine creative force, whatever you choose to call it, the great spirit, Allah, Buddha, the Tao, however you choose to look at that divine creative force, there seem to be three sort of aspects or three facets of that divine thing. Ernest Holmes called that spirit, soul, and body. This taken in the macrocosm, by that I mean at a universe level, is God. It is all that is. And this taken, this idea of spirit, soul, and body, taken at the individual level, at the level of you and me, is that same principle in the microcosm. We are the creator of our own experience. Just as that divine essence created all that is, all of the manifest world, the universe, being the body, the physical body of God, if you will. And our lives are the outpicturing of that same process within what we do and what we are. And it is best shown in our teaching symbol. Oh, you even got some of the stuff put in. You are so good. Boy, she makes the slides and does the clicks and advances them and everything. You notice it is in the form of a circle. I want to be really clear that this circle does not mean that there is God in the middle and not God on the outside. The reason is that it is a circle is to represent that there is no beginning and no end. That it is infinite in nature. No beginning and no end. It is not a fence or a wall that says God's in here and not God is out there. Go back to this idea that God is all there is. We talked about it last week. The university professor challenged his students with this question. Did God create everything that exists? The student bravely replied, well, yes, he did. God created everything? The professor asked. Yes, sir, the student replied. The professor answered, if God created everything, then God created evil. Since evil exists, and according to the principle that our works define who we are, then God is evil. The student became quiet before such an answer. The professor was quite pleased with himself and boasted to the students that he had once again proven that the Christian faith is a myth. And you could put in any other religion, the Buddhist faith, the... Another student raised his hand and he said, can I ask a question, professor? Of course, replied the professor. The student stood up and said, professor, does cold exist? What kind of question is this? Of course it exists. Have you never been cold? All the students snickered at the young man's question. The young man replied, in fact, sir, cold does not exist. According to the laws of physics, what we consider cold is really the absence of heat. Every body or object is susceptible to study when it has or transmits energy. And heat is what makes a body or matter have or transmit energy. Absolute zero, which is minus 460 degrees F, is the total absence of heat. All matter becomes inert and incapable of reaction at that temperature. Cold does not exist. We have created this word to describe how we feel if we have no heat. The student continued, professor, does darkness exist? The professor responded, well, of course it does. The student replied, once again, you are wrong, sir. Darkness does not exist either. Darkness is in reality the absence of light. Light we can study, but not darkness. In fact, we can use Newton's prism to break white light into many colors and study the various wavelengths of each color. You cannot measure darkness. A simple ray of light can break into a world of darkness and illuminate it. How can you know how dark a certain space is? You measure the amount of light present. Isn't this correct? Darkness is a term used by man to describe what happens when there is no light present. Finally, the young man asked the professor, "Sir, does evil exist?" Now uncertain, the professor responded, "Well, of course, as I've already said, we see it every day. It's in the daily example of man's inhumanity to man. It is in the multitude of crime and violence everywhere in the world. These manifestations are nothing else but evil." To this, the student replied, "Evil does not exist, sir, or at least it does not exist unto itself. Evil is simply the absence of God. It is just like darkness in a cold world man has created to describe the absence of God. God did not create evil. Evil is not like faith or love that exists just as does light and heat. Evil is the result of what happens when man does not have God's love present in his heart. It is like the cold that comes when there is no heat, or the darkness that comes when there is no light." The professor sat down. The young man's name? Albert Einstein. Now, I need to tell you, this story has been debunked by Snopes. But what Snopes says, and I think this is important, is there is no proof that Einstein ever said this. And regardless of who said it, the truth is that this is absolute truth, that there is no such thing as evil. There is an absence of God. Now, in our philosophy and the way we look at the world, the way we look at things, we look at it as separation. We don't say there's an absence of God. We say that we have separation from one another. We have separation from God. We don't say that there is a lack or absence of God. Last year, a man sat in his 42nd Street high-rise New York City office, and his hands were trembling as he held an old, old book. The man's name was Menachem Rosensaft. He's the son of Joseph Rosensaft. And in the book that he held in his hands, he hoped to find out what happened in those 5 days. The book had been written by one of the other two men who were in that cell in Auschwitz in 1943. He learned as he read this manuscript written in Hebrew that they were right, that the Unterkapo had indeed overheard their plans and had given the information to the Nazis, who in turn had the address in the little town where the doctor was at, and they dispatched a young, up-and-coming, high-potential Nazi officer to arrest this officer who would commit the heinous crime of protecting these three escaped Jews, to bring him back and execute him as well. This young, up-and-coming officer's name was Otto Klaus. When Otto Klaus arrived at the little village, he knocked on the door with all of the authority of a Nazi officer ready to arrest this doctor. The door opened up and he stepped back in shock. He knew this man. For you see, 25 years earlier in World War I, Otto Klaus's father, who had been an officer in the German army in World War I, had been severely wounded. And this doctor had taken him in, had nursed him back to health, and saved his life. And after the war was over, the two families continued to stay in touch. And as a small boy growing up, he had been to that village. He had been to that man's house. That man had been to his house in Germany. He could not turn in the man that had saved his life. So Otto Klaus returned to Auschwitz with a report that said, this doctor is above suspicion. There are no plans for escape and no plans to get away. Our informant was misinformed. And so the men were returned to their original barracks. They were eventually separated into three different concentration camps. This is a great story in itself. But what the point that I want everyone to understand is that even in what is undoubtedly humanity's darkest hour, there were still the fingerprints of the divine. We still have our teaching symbol. We look at these three aspects of the divine. We call the first spirit, that's the top. We call the medium soul, and the bottom we call body. Other names that we have for it, the top we call conscious mind, first cause, the unformed substance, or love. In quantum theory, we would call that the field of quantum possibilities. It's infinite in nature. The middle area, which we call the soul, we also call the creative medium, the servant, or the law. And when we place something from the top, from that spirit, and that can be a thought, an idea, on the human level, that's what we have, attitudes, beliefs, thoughts. And when they go into the creative medium, they cannot help but create a form or an effect. The bottom we call body, effect, form, or a manifestation. So on the human level, our lives are the outpicturing of what we put in. As above, so below. And if the effect that we have in our body, in our lives, if that is not what we want, if that's not what we believe, if that's not what we claim, there is something else contributing to it. I may have the firm belief that I should be making $100,000 a year. And I claim that, I believe it, I know that, and I claim an income of $100,000 a year, but I'm only making $24,000. What gives with that? That's because I likely have a hidden belief that I'm only worth 24. And it's those hidden beliefs that trick us. When we are experiencing things in our lives that aren't in alignment with what we believe and what we think, we need to look at what those hidden beliefs could be. Because this law is as infallible as gravity. The divine creative process. The last point that I'm going to make today, and this is a short one, is that the universe is made of a fabric of oneness. Oneness is the thing that ties the entire universe together. Holmes talks about love and law. And he talks about love and law as two aspects of this oneness. I like to use the plant example. a leaf has a different function than does the stem. But both are necessary for the plant to exist. And both are contained within the seed. And that is the fabric of oneness that ties us all together. And we can see this divine creative process in the same way as we talk about and we can think of that as the seed as being spirit or conscious cause or first cause, unformed substance. We can place that into the soil, which can be represented by the soul, the creative medium, the servant, the law, and the outcome is the plant. The outcome is the body, the effect, or the form. So if we want to experience tomatoes, we need to plant tomato seeds. We can't plant tomato seeds and harvest potatoes. What we put in is what we get back out. And love and law are the two aspects of oneness, and the universe is made of a fabric of oneness. The takeaway for today, the conclusion, the thing that I want everybody to embrace for this week, is that we are creators of our own experience through our thoughts, our attitudes, and our beliefs. And we're going to talk more in the next few weeks about how we can change our thinking to change our lives. But I want everyone today to understand that we are the creators of our own experiences. So with that in mind, I would like to invite my colleagues, practitioners, to join me in holding our congregation in love, knowing that divine presence, the divine creative force of the universe,